All right, we're getting down to the wire here. We have a caller on the line from
Billings.
Billings, good evening.
Just a quick observation. If you're calling public, all due respect begins to assume that differences of opinion have to be taken personally. Your program will go in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be able to have an open forum and not demand some sort of situation where someone who dislikes what I have to say, I have to look up.
Sure.
You don't want to go that route. On the issue of the prison system, I think we do need to constantly remind ourselves that what is being done to people is being done in your name and mine.
Mm-hmm.
We have an obligation to monitor that, and understanding that these issues are not easily resolvable. It's the eternal vigilance syndrome that has to be maintained.
Yep.
That's all I have to say.
Thank you much. All right, and a call.
We have a Billings caller.
All right. Disclaimer after disclaimer tonight. Billings, go ahead.
Well, hello, Clarice. Is this Clarice? Oops. Well, I have to agree with the lady who called. There are problems. I don't know that the motor-driven vehicles in the Western world will ever learn to respect pedestrians and bicyclists. They ought to all be out in the same flow of traffic. You ever watched a view of some of the big cities in China, and everyone is on a bicycle, nobody's wearing safety helmets, and they seem to get along quite well.
Yeah, yeah.
They're in the majority, that's why.
Or as a friend of mine noted once, that they got off a train in Tokyo, and there were thousands of bicycles parked at the train station, and none of them were locked.
Oh, yes. Well, I had to point out to someone from, I think they were living out on the West End, that the shopping carts at the grocery store, that's not homeless parking.
Okay, geez.
They're not sure about that.
That's sad.
There were a couple of points I wanted to I have a question I'd like to raise. I wonder if when we burnt the point and had the charity organization, if anyone from the folks doing the good, and I'm all for, I'm sure they did do a lot of good, but did anyone go to the Women's Children Family Shelter downtown, or even the Hub or the Mission, and see if there were people who might have liked some temporary work, perhaps connected with at least cleaning up or setting things out?
That's a good question, yeah.
The charity's a great thing, but I live in a district, Marvin, that has 7,000 people in it. Nobody seems to realize that, the downtown area.
Mm-hmm.
We have at least 280 registered voters. We've been as high as 600. And sometimes I think we forget that maybe a little industry wouldn't be a bad thing to have along with the charity work.
And a recent survey indicated, I think we mentioned on this program, a recent survey indicated that a lot of other people would like to live downtown if they could find suitable quarters, you know. I think we're talking about gentrification in that case.
Yeah, they're working on raising the rent, so I will leave,
Loft,
sooner or later.
Loft apartments and that sort of thing in some of these older warehouse buildings, that would make sense. Could I ask you what Burn the Point means? I'm so ignorant. I saw these signs out saying Burn the Point, and I don't know what it means.
Well, people who have reached a certain age, not quite long in the tooth, but getting there. At one time, they used to come down to Division Street. I have to get my directions right. Going eastward to what was the old downtown section, when we had places like Kohl's and Hart Albans and nothing much was open, so all you did was sort of drive around, sit out on the back of the car, talk to people, turn on the radio until the police came along, told you to leave.
Uh-huh.
And somewhere in the 80s, we had a county treasurer, I think it was, that's what she was, Mae Jenkins, who, along with the then police chief, got excited about some of the problems, along with business people, and they really started getting after kids who were there. The sidewalks more or less zipped up at 9 o'clock, but they had to have something to do. And so there was this little dance that went on, as always does, between the generations of finding a place where they could sort of be themselves, play their music, have a good time, not get in trouble. And the more staid folk who felt that they must be up to something out there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that was essentially what it was all about.
But I still don't get how it means
the point. It's the, that's, well, you, what you cruise. Cruise the point.
So you can't
cruise
drive
the point?
A you can't drive a six shift. If you know how to pop the clutch and burn the tires as come off of the point down there where Division Street was,
getting
away from the cops, you were burning point.
Okay, all right. See, yeah, I've only been here 18 years. You know, the point, I'm just now getting what you're talking about.
Yeah. It was kind of a, there was some things that went on, but some things, you know, there was still an issue over teen drinking and what have you.
Yeah.
And I assume that this has to be something of the nostalgia that's tied into that. I doubt that you really had that much going on in the 50s. There was a little more, a little different town there. But it's a nice little touch. It's more of a 70s and 80s, early 80s thing than it was, I think, 60s and 50s.
Yeah, I caught the tail end of the point.
All that sort of gets mixed in together now.
When it was downtown.
And you caught the tail end of this?
I caught the tail end of it when it was downtown, but then it's moved out to 24th Street.
Did you ever get to meet Gene Kaiser? You never got, you know, this guy, now here's an urban legend from Billings. There were always reports that Mr. Kaiser and one or another of the city council members used to park themselves either at one of the parking garages near a strip joint, used to be a studio theater, and they would take license plates and try to see who went in this nefarious establishment. I've never had that confirmed.
Yeah, yeah.
They claimed.
Well, I'm sure they did. Yeah, all right. Yeah, I'm sure they did.
But, a more serious issue, and I will shut up and run here, but there is an article in the Scientific American that I thought perhaps someday Mr. Siebert might help us get some material on the new cyber crimes law or treaty that started in Europe. And, of course, once a treaty is ratified, it has the force of law here, but it essentially strips you of your First Amendment rights completely. They want the logs and names and addresses of anyone that's on the air. It's being heavily lobbied by our justice system as being a perfectly wonderful idea. Of course, protecting children and what have you is their plank on it. But essentially, as I had siblings and relatives that have worked over in Europe, and I have a private post office box, that's not permitted in places in Europe. You have no anonymity is what part of this is all about. You can't have a post office box. You're going to have verifiable return addresses. It would heavily invade First and Fourth Amendment rights, as I understand it.
I think the rationale for this, as I read it in the New York Times not too long ago, partly is that they're not looking for everybody. They're not looking, see, they claim they're only looking for people with records. They're looking for people who are known to be a problem. And that's why if they have all the information, then they can recognize those things.
The standard argument has always been.
It always is. If
you don't have anything to hide,
that's right.
What are you worried about?
What you're worried about. That's right. Sure. And well, I heard that about the Fifth Amendment all the time when I was growing up.
As the article, as I say, this is Scientific American, not Montana Militia Magazine or anything. So I put a little credence in it, and as they point out, do you want your medical records sent in the email equivalent of a postcard to open to the public?
Right.
That I find interesting.
We're going to do a program again in our Bill of Rights series that deals with that general issue. And we've done one on cyberspace and privacy, but we're going to do another one that will focus more on whether it is even possible to have privacy in the context of the Internet.
No.
It really is something that we're going to have to deal with. The lady who called who said she was kind of recuperating...
Yes.
I thought I would point out in this issue, in this month's issue of Writer's Digest, I laughingly think of myself as a writer, so I read this magazine. Books that have actually been asked for at a library. One of them was called Satanic Nurses by Salman Rushdie. And there were also people who were looking for I Left My Heart at Broken Arm. And Carson McCullough's great work, The Salad at a Bad Restaurant. But the one that really got me, and I've never seen a copy, is called Diuretics by L. Ron Hubbard. Well, I got to go play Hood Ornament in traffic, so you guys take care.
Yes, and talking about nostalgia, we have a caller from
Billings.
Billings, good evening.
Well, in listening to the previous caller, I'm glad to know I'm not the only one struck by Mr. Bush's being rhetorically challenged, I guess would be a good term for it.
You always come up with good terms.
Well, term limits is a good thing, too, in some cases. I really think, and I find it interesting, that part of the problem, though, is the personality that's developed out of the Bush family. And I found it intriguing, especially during the campaign, that while we had multiple numbers of people writing books and pundits analyzing the Clinton background and the Gore background, you have a man in the executive branch now who comes from a family where positioning is important. You have in the father of Mr. Bush a man who always played things close to the vest. He didn't really like the press coming in and inquiring about exactness, and there was no exactness in Mr. Bush's speech tonight. You couldn't disagree with anything that he said. It's like, you know, I'm not opposed to home and mom and apple pie either. But there was no specific details as to what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, you have Mr. Ashcroft and Mr. Thompson and other people in the cabinet going full speed ahead on continuing to compromise the privacy of the American people. And I think the public is beginning to want to see something produced for what we're expending in personal liberty.
And that's why the president supposedly gave this speech tonight, and the White House encouraged broadcasters to carry it, and most of them did, was the president wanted to reassure people that something very specific and real was being done on the home front. I'm suggesting from your remarks that you don't think he got that message across.
I haven't figured out what that was yet, except what we, of course, as a public have said. We want to find the people who planned or who were part of the perpetration of the tragedies in September.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly we need to be aware that we are facing the reality now of ongoing kinds of terrorism in a world with 7 billion people in a global village. But he didn't lay out much, and I don't expect him to, considering his background, in the way of details. He doesn't want the press to know what the military is doing, and within reason, that's understandable, but there are a lot of gaps in this. And at the same time, again, I hear a rising rhetoric from people who have attached themselves to this kind of conservative politics. I listened to markets in Minneapolis and on the coast and other places,
yeah.
And they're attacking National Public Radio again.
Sure.
Talking about fifth columnists and left wingers threatening us.
Sure.
So where is this bringing us together? And this direction, this purpose, I just don't see that. And by the way, on the broadcast band, the only station carrying him live tonight was ABC, Channel 6. And I didn't dial the radio around, but I doubt you had a lot of competition carrying
right.
it live locally.
NBC had the courage to come right out and say they weren't carrying the president live because it competed with their most successful sitcom, Friends.
Uh-huh. Well, I've always admired Friends. Friends, Cheers, and MASH were very popular, and remarkably, they managed to come out standing up for some sort of liberal stance, but they're amazingly unintegrated.
Yes,
at
right.
the same time. So I guess NBC deserves some kudos. I just wanted to say I think we need to demand more from this cabinet, from these people that are involved in this. And I would appreciate Mr. Bush at least being honest enough to say that there are some things he can only be reactive about.
Mm-hmm.
We can't possibly plan everything ahead.
All right.
Take care.
Yep. Thank you much. We have a caller on the line from...
We have a caller from Billings.
Billings, good evening.
I thought I should start out by apologizing for letting my emotions get to me yesterday evening. I think I went a little over the top.
Well, you've done that before.
But there are some things that sort of get me going, and reason should play the part in it, and I'm sorry if I perhaps carried things too far. Certainly no personal attacks were intended on any of the callers. But
you didn't call anybody names or anything.
Well, it's one of those things I don't remember. And I just I appreciate the program. I don't want to do anything to harm it. And I did feel, after I sort of collected myself, that there are there are things that are near and dear to my heart, and I have seen a lot of suffering sometimes visited on people, not so much by intent as by the kind of accepted everybody knows situation,
yeah.
And I guess I lost it a little bit on that, and I'm sorry for letting that take over.
You know what it made me think of, and this is not related at all to the family that was in the Gazette the other day who were helped, and that's a good story, but your comments and her comments last night reminded me of that discussion you'll remember back on one of our Bill of Rights programs where the story was told about a judge in Helena who had told a woman who had had multiple convictions for drug abuse that she couldn't have any more children. And someone suggested that that was a violation of her rights. And it made me think of just how complex some of these issues get. Because I certainly agreed with the judge, but at the same time, her convictions for drug abuse may not have anything to do with her right to be a mother.
I think it points out how much we do need open debate, and that's what I would encourage. You were talking about priming the pump, and I'd like to share this with you, just totally different, doesn't have anything to do with, but the old long handle yard pump.
Yes.
Used to have them back in the South. There are some similarities
in the
way we grew up, Mark.
We had them in the North, too. We had them in the North. Yeah.
That's frightening. But back down where I grew up, you know, there are people way back up in the hills. I don't know if Michigan has sort of outback, but we do have some isolated folk back home.
My county was called Hillsdale County, and it was the outback of Michigan. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there was a couple of fellows that didn't come down to the settlement very often, and they decided they'd make the trip into town coming out of the Smokies there, and one says to the other, what are you going to do on the way down to town? You run into some of these people, they get a little uppity with us folks that don't live down by the post office. He says, if I see a feller that looks like he thinks too much of himself, he says, I think I'm just going to jump him right there and just thrash him. Well, as they were walking past one of the farms, there was a fella pumping water for the chickens out in his yard, out in his woods lot, and they walked on by. Ezekiel, says Rufus to him, he says, Ezekiel, I thought you said you was going to whoop the first fella you saw that looked like he might think a little uppity about himself. Well, he said, I was, but when I seed that fella taking a stick and knocking water out of a stump with it, I thought he might be more than I could handle. Have a good evening.
Thank you very much. All right, we have a caller on the line from
Billings.
Billings, good evening.
Well, good evening, and we'll wish you a better year ahead.
We did get your card, by the way. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for that.
We all read it and blushed.
Oh, well, I have a brief gift for Mr. Siebert and one for you if we have time.
Okay.
From Rhymes of a Red Cross Man by Robert W. Service.
Okay.
Mr. Siebert.
Please, yes.
Thank you.
Grand Père. And so when you reached my bed, the general made a stand. My brave young fellow, he said, I would shake your hand. So I lifted my arm, the right, with never a hand at all, only a stump, a sight fit to appall. Well, well, now that's too bad. That's sorrowful luck, he said. But there, you give me, my lad, the left instead. So from under the blanket's rim, I raised and showed him the other, a snag as ugly and grim as its ugly brother. He looked at each jagged wrist. He looked, but he did not speak. And then he bent down and kissed me on either cheek. Now, you wonder now, I don't mind. I hadn't a hand to offer. They tell me, you know, I'm blind. 'Twas Grand-Père Hofer.
Hmm.
That's Robert W. Service.
Yeah.
I have one I'd like to read. It's just about as short for you, Mr.
Yes.
Granger.
Yes, thank you.
Eugene Field wrote a book that many people have never heard of. He penned a lot of poetry. It's called The Clink of the Ice. And he's a good Western writer, and I shan't read all of it, but the first few verses you might enjoy. Notably fond of music, and this is Eugene Field, Clink of the Ice, I dote on a sweeter tone than ever the harp has uttered or ever the lute has known. when I wake at 5 in the morning with a feeling in my head suggestive of mild excesses before I retired to bed, when a small but fierce volcano vexes me sore inside, and my throat and mouth are furred with a fur that seemeth a buffalo hide, how gracious those dews of solace that over my senses fall at the clink of the ice in the pitcher the boy brings up the hall.
I didn't know you knew that much about my nightlife.
Well, you know, it takes one to know one.
Okay.
I don't know whether you're familiar with Rachel Field, but she has a short little piece. I've been to Greenwich Village, and there is a short little piece, and I offer this as my good wishes to all the listeners who put up with me. It's called Love Knows Where.
Okay.
Someday, when these bricks are dust, another house will rise. None will be left to say that we were foolish or wise, that flesh took warmth from flesh. No one will know or care. Lost will be this low room with the shabby couch and chair. Yet firelight was our host, and a black-armed city tree by a brightened window pane shared love's identity. And though we are nothing then, though the four walls disappear, two of us, out of time, found sanctuary here. Peace, brethren.
Thank you very much, and a Happy New Year to you. And that's a perfect ending for this program, because we're going to lead into... We have a caller on the line from...
Billings.
Billings, good evening.
And trying to...
That was my fault, Billings.
Yeah.
Well, it was somebody, but go ahead. I think I'd rather talk to this person. Go ahead.
We're getting a lot of static there. I hope you had a cosmic Valentine Day.
Oh, geez. Cosmic?
Cosmic.
No, I'm a kind of a bah humbug person on Valentine's Day, you know?
Well, we tried to make sure you got a card.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. I wanted to encourage you to have a happy childhood, or second one anyway.
Yes, well, I'm not quite there yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
We can all do these things. I wanted to make a brief comment on the Winter Olympics.
Please.
Since there was some discussion that I've heard and seen in print over the issues of the judges and what have you, I do have a problem with thinking of this as anything like a continuation of the 800 years of Hellenic competition. I don't think we're quite there, even with the intent that was found in 1890. And even that, as I understand and reflect on the history there, the idea was to promote understanding among youth, which was nothing like what the original games were. They were religious exercise as much as anything else. But one of the key philosophies behind that was the idea that the good and the beautiful would prevail, that the artistry of the competition would be what was important. And it is a matter of the ancient Greek records that some of the winners that were crowned with a branch, with the olive branch, were actually not the people who came in first in the race, or outdid anyone in the weightlifting or whatever, throw and so forth. They were the ones the judges felt had performed with the most artistic style. And I don't know that that can actually be applied to the current brouhaha over the figure skating.
Yeah.
But part of that is certainly something that we seem to be abandoning, is the idea of competition for the personal best, rather than competition just to see who can win and get the Wheaties box.
Well, yeah, winning is everything, and winning has to be done by rules that everybody, in the contemporary scene, that everybody can recognize and agree upon. And what you're talking about when you talk about grace and beauty and art... Hard to quantify those things, you know?
It is. It's always subjective, and yet I think that ideal that was striven for in those original games did have a religious impact. And I think, quite frankly, we're seeing in the Western world a sort of universal, almost, if I may use what seems to be an oxymoron, a secular religion in sport. We could debate about whether baseball or football or basketball are actually sports. I think they're more of
interurban or clannish type competition in their origins, but there is still that ability to appreciate what the human body can do if it is well trained.
Mm-hmm.
That we would go back to appreciating the skill and grace of a Mark McGuire and learn to appreciate what people do. Someone criticized not long ago, too, I noticed in print, and I hear it in other places, the idea of introducing these so-called weird games, such as snowboarding. And here again, part of what we seem to be missing, because we're not really looking at an Olympic approach as much as the 1890 ideal of trying to promote competition, the games, I think, should reflect what young people around the world can do under the increasingly urbanized setting. And at mm-hmm. one time, we could get out and play backlot football and appreciate someone then that was a professional like Mark Green or in McGuire in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have people who can get out on the skateboard, or they can do the snowboarding, or they can do the extreme sports. And having seen some of those, these are people who have, in my mind, an unquestioned, superb ability that probably won't last much past 25 or 30. Mm-hmm. And they should be appreciated and recognized for that. Curling reflects some local things from Bemidji to Scotland, where it originated.
Yes.
we have to sort of look at these things in that sense, I think.
Now, if I had to vote between snowboarding and curling on a scale of personal best kinds of things, I always tend to think of athletes as people who compete primarily with themselves. And on that scale, I think snowboarding is probably a more personal best kind of sport. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Now, I also think you mentioned Mark McGuire. I think he's an example. Pitcher Greg Maddux is an example. Sammy Sosa probably is an example of people who are always competing more with themselves than they are with... They're competing with their own record and their own sense of their possibilities than they are with the other team, and I somehow respect that. I'm not suggesting you would disagree with that, except that that's, you know...
Yes.
You know, that's basically what it seems to me to be the greatest...
Isn't that the attraction people have for watching a Michael Jordan or a John Elway or Michelle Akers or in women's soccer? All of these things, it should be something to encourage us, especially as we grow more sedentary in the way we make a living.
Sure.
But I just wanted to point that out. I think we need to reevaluate some of the hype that's going into it. We're going to spend $1.5 billion, I understand, out of American tax money to have these games, and that's something we're going to start looking at too.
This thing about the skaters, there is an argument, and I've heard it made by an American the other day, that the Russian performance was more complex, and that there was more overall art in terms of your introducing that as a standard, while the Canadians were technically perfect in relation to the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
But that the idea that the Canadians were just cheated out of it by people who were corrupt, I think it's a bit more complex than that.
I think we have to stay abreast of how things are developing. I think we have to look also at this kind of activity as reflecting youth. This is not something you're going to have too many people over 60 getting involved in. There may be a few, you know.
I think they should have an Olympics for people our age.
A senior Olympics, eh? Now, this is just to give you an example.
Give a whole new meaning to slow motion.
Just to give you an example of technology changing things, the long board that was supposedly being brought back in surfing out on the coast,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't actually brought back. The original surfers were the Tongan and Polynesian aristocracy,
that's right. Yep.
Who could carry a 200-pound piece of palm wood out into the surf. And what we brought back were the laminated sandwiches of polystyrene and what have you, mm-hmm. that didn't weigh 35 pounds. The shortboard was a development to make it possible for all those bushy blonde hairdos out of Marin County to get out and look good.
Mm-hmm.
and hang 10 with Joe Cool and Snoopy. But, you know.
Thank you for
you know what I'm talking about. Well, anyway.
Thank you for your ongoing commentary on American culture.
Absolutely.
Thank you much. We have a caller on the line from Billings. Go ahead. You're on the air.
I gather, first of all, I should congratulate Bozeman. Are we expanding some things up there? Or?
We have a new studio there, yes.
Well, that's great.
Yes.
I'm glad to know the community of people connected with public radio is expanding, and I appreciate very much your giving us the opportunity to discuss this subject. The reason I called, you were talking about some aspects of censorship in regards to the obvious problems of what we think of as blatant vulgarity or obscenity as well as hate crimes. But I think one of the issues we need to watch as a society, and I gather you get a little bit of this from books that are disappearing or books that come back loaded with instructions on what a wonderful plan God has for your life, is this militancy that deals with language that is offensive to one part of a community. And I don't know how the library alone or the booksellers alone can address the issue of this increasingly militant idea in society that it's not enough for me to say, you know, every time I hear the name Ken, I think of, my God, they've killed Kenny, and therefore that must be about South Park. I don't want to hear that name again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm using that specifically. This is an absurdity that we get into. There are people who seem unwilling to simply say to themselves, this is part of a multicultural society that I have to deal with. Are there programs that the library or the booksellers or other groups may be involved in that have to do with desensitizing us, for want of a better word, to the idea that we must think in one term only? The issue also of the Patriot Act, I suppose you'd have to take Please Steal This Book off the list or be very careful about who checked it out. If anyone was even remembering Abby Hoffman, those are issues that I think go into the realm of censorship, as well as the more subtle things that we wind up with in school systems as to a uniform dress code or how you should cut your hair. Censorship to me goes far beyond just simply words, although certainly you've demonstrated well that those things are still hot-button issues. And I'll just hang up and listen and congratulate you and tell you that it's great to have the audio on with this while I watch the Olympics.
We have a caller from Billings.
Hi,
oh,
Billings.
Good evening.
Hello.
I think I'll start by congratulating the City Council and the art group for providing us with what will surely put us in the record books as having the largest pigeon, raven, crow, and sparrow roost anywhere west of the Mississippi.
I was hoping something more interesting would find it, but we'll have to wait and see.
Well, I had to interject that. I don't know what we're going to wind up naming it. I'm glad we have something for people to come down and look at here in the downtown area. And
can you see it from your window?
No, it's...
Maybe for the benefit of our listeners outside the Billings area, we should mention what it actually
it's
is.
It's a thing!
It's
a thing! No,
it's a steel construct that covers a whole cross-section of the downtown area. Now, you can't get a license very easily to put sidewalk tables out, but we did manage to put this up. And I have to think that spending money for that and $1 million to build the sidewalk that goes from nowhere to no place, you know, the bike path, that demonstrates some true fiscal responsibility. And the reason I bring those up, just to be a little germane to what some of your other callers are talking about, in 1997, for 276 days, with only a couple of breaks, the Yellow River in China ran dry. Mm-hmm. They lost $1.7 billion in agricultural products. I suggest, before we worry about understanding the vagaries of Islamic theology, you take a drive here in the Billings area and take a look at the Yellowstone River, mm-hmm. and understand that those of you out on the West End who are spraying your lawns this evening,
may be looking at water rationing shortly.
Mm-hmm. As that gentleman a few callers back was started talking about water and dams, I thought he was talking about the Mideast. I'm just surprised there isn't more reporting on that, because you could have the Israelis and the Palestinians all hugging each other tomorrow, and the day after they'd be fighting over water.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll just say this and hush. First of all, before I go any further, I do want to thank everyone that's involved with the KEMC for keeping this thing going. I'm glad we were able to get people turning in and putting in whatever they could. It's important that we have aesthetic uplift, and I think KEMC and NPR provide that for us. However, having said that, you know, I think one of the reasons you don't hear that brought up, and I'm glad someone did, is because it's easier for us to sit down and try to understand the vagaries of Calvinism versus Jansenist thinking in the Catholic Church, or why in the world the Irish have been fighting each other,
mm-hmm.
and actually think somehow we've come up with a solution, because we are looking at the train coming down the track at us, folks,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to have to do something about water rights, development out here, and nationwide.
And
we're looking at
it's
some
worldwide.
Really serious problems about mm-hmm. filling your belly.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the China, and it's the Mideast. It's worldwide.
If you want to look at what we're going to have to deal with, you better study mainland China. They have been feeding their people on the equivalent of a tennis court of arable land per capita for many years now.
Mm-hmm.
17 cents a day for a lot of people in mainland China is what they survive on. And the fellow was talking about the people who came out here and wanted to see if they could survive out in the West. Understand that these people are living without benefit of many hygienic elements that we think are necessary, such as a roll of tissue paper.
Mm-hmm.
Get a grip on reality, and we need to turn out in the electorate. We need to be voting on mill levies. We need to be educating people to look at some serious development of how to deal with things. We need webmasters. We need people who know how to do something with this equipment so that we can continue to sustain a free society. Freedom is always a reciprocal of economic stability, I think. That's just my opinion there. If you have people who know they're going to eat and they got a roof over their head and they can actually have a little discretionary money so they can sit down and talk about whether or not Samson was a suicide and went to hell or was a martyr for the cause. That's where we have the freedom, and if we don't start looking at our resources and managing them and talking about those dull and boring details of life, we're going to get in trouble. And I will say, I'm glad we're trying to do something aesthetically. I'm teasing the people a little bit about their crow roost, You know me, I can't help it. I'm just totally depraved according to some biblical doctrines. That comes out.
Well, we might end up liking the thing.
You guys have a good week.
Thank you. Night.
And our next to last caller tonight is from
Billings.
Billings, good evening.
There'll be a school board election on Tuesday.
Yes.
It'll be interesting to see how many people are at least interested enough to turn out and vote on the mill levy.
Why is it May 7th rather than in June with the regular primary?
I have no idea why they did that. That has something to do with the peculiar and bogus election laws of this state.
Right.
If you live across a natural barrier, you can't incorporate a town and such things as that. We do need to update a few things.
Okay.
However, I do hope people will turn out and vote for the mill levy, or at least on it, I'll put it that way,
sure.
And on the people who are standing for that. And glad to hear your voice. I would say, and then I'll hang up here, what will it take in the way of increasing my pledge to get you to promise never to pose for a centerfold?
I promise that right now.
Please.
Whether you increase your pledge or not, you know.
I'm not sure what that would have a deleterious effect on the whole environment, Marvin.
Yeah, this is
with all
this
due
is,
respect.
This is not environmentally good policy. I understand
this
that.
This is true.
Yes.
Well, I'll let you go. I may get a cell phone and start calling you from the defining element downtown.
Please do that. We'd like to have an ongoing play-by-play relating to, I drove under this thing two or three times this last week, and I said to myself, my God, why? So, I hope it isn't finished yet.
It's free-form art. It's like the art in front of Wells Fargo.
Is it done?
They've got to go back and make a few molds, wells a little better, I think, or sand or something like that, and it's supposed to represent the free spirit that public radio presents.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you very much.
Just flows right out there.
I got you. All right. Thank you.